सुप्रभातम् सर्वेषां नमस्कारः योगसूत्र परिचय वर्गस्य एकविंशः वर्गः आरम्भः प्रार्थना श्लोकेन योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचां मलं शरीरस्य च वैद्यकेन योपाकरोत्तं प्रवरं मुनीनां पतञ्जलिं प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि। सो विल् डू द रिव्यू आफ् दि प्रीवियस् क्लास्। सो इन् द प्रीवियस् क्लास् विच् वास् टु वीक्स् अगो वि डिस्कस्ड् द अवान्तर फलास् द इण्टर्मीडियेट् बेनिफिट्स् आफ् द नियमास् one by one, shaucha, santosha, tapas, swadhyaya and ishvara pranidhana. Among all the five niyamas, it is the shaucham which has been given utmost importance. The benefits of shaucham has been laid out in very great detail. Swanga jugupsa, paraihi asamsargaha, sattva shuddhihi, सौमनस्यम् इन्द्रियजयः आत्मदर्शनयोग्यत्वम्। सो आल् दीस् बेनिफिट्स् आर् गिवन् टु शौच अण्ड् सन्तोष इस् सुखलाभः, तपः कायसिद्धि अण्ड् इन्द्रियसिद्धि, स्वाध्याय रिसल्ट्स् इन् इष्टदेवता सम्प्रयोगः अण्ड् ईश्वरप्रणिधानम् अ वे टु रीच् समाधि। So these are the intermediate benefits of the niyamas. So of the two limbs of the eight limbs of the Ashtanga Yoga, the first two limbs, the first two angas were discussed, yama and niyama. So yama and niyama, the constituents of yama and niyama, the way it has to be practiced, that was also discussed. The lakshanam of yama and niyama was discussed, and then the guidelines for practice, like it should be mahavratam, that was also mentioned, and then the possible obstacles that may come in the path of the practice of yama and niyama, that is the vitarka, vitarka badhanam, and the method to overcome it, that is pratipaksha bhavanam, that was also mentioned. And finally, when yama and niyama becomes very firm, a person becomes very strong or very firm in the practice of yama and niyama, what are all the benefits that he attains through yama and niyama, that was also listed out. So this is a thorough exposition in the Yoga Sutras on yama and niyama. Quite a few sutras have been devoted to the first two concepts, that is yama and niyama, first two limbs or angas, yama and niyama, which itself emphasizes that, as you will see, excepting dharana, dhyana and samadhi, for which an entire chapter has been devoted, that is the third chapter, yama and niyama comes next. So the number of sutras, they are higher than any other limbs, so which clearly emphasizes the importance that is given to both yama and niyama by Patanjali. More than 15 sutras have been given are devoted to discussing the various aspects of yama and niyama by Patanjali. Now comes asana. Asana was also discussed in the previous class, and as you can see, the last segment of the second pada deals with asana, pranayama and pratyahara within the range of the sutras 46 to 55. So of this, 46 to 48 discuss only asana. So sthirasukham asanam, the lakshanam of asana was mentioned, firm and comfortable. Asana should be firm and comfortable, that was discussed. Prayatna Shaithilya and Ananta Samapatti, the Upaya, the technique or the method by which this Sthira Sukham Asanam has to be achieved, that was mentioned in the Prayatna Shaithilya Ananta Samapatti Sutra, which lists out two methods, Prayatna Shaithilya and Ananta Samapatti. So again, I promised to upload my articles, research articles on Prayatna Shaithilya and Ananta Samapatti. I realized that I have not uploaded it. It will be uploaded in this week without any further delay. So there are many shades of meanings for the term Prayatna Shaithilya, and similarly again Ananta Samapatti is also a term, a concept or a technique which has very great detail, and hence I would request everyone to go through those articles. Generally speaking, Prayatna Shaithilya is avoiding too much strenuous efforts before the practice of asana, and Ananta Samapatti is during the practice of asana, one's mind should be allowed to get transformed into Ananta. Again, Ananta may be Patanjali himself, the Adishesha, who holds the universe, and Ananta may also refer to something which is endless, like the Akasha. That's what the commentators say. So allowing the mind to merge into something which is vast, so that the focus from the body is shifted, and the body can attain asana in a comfortable way. That is the idea that is generally presented on Prayatna Shaithilya and Ananta Samapatti. Of course, there are various other interpretations that you will get to see in those two research articles. And so this is the technique. So of course, asana has to be practiced, and while practicing, these two techniques are to be accorded the right place. They have to be kept in mind while practicing asana. And then what results from this asana? There are many benefits of asana which are detailed in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika. You will get Vapuh Krishatvam, Vadane Prasannata, Nadas Putatvam, Nayane Sunirmale, Arogata, Bindu Jayaha, Agni Deepanam. All these are the benefits of asana. And asanena rujohanti, asanena rajohanti. Asana helps to remove diseases. Asanas help to remove or reduce the impact of rajas. All these you can find in the Hatha Yoga texts. Whereas, from the point of view of Raja Yoga, from the point of view of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, the benefit of asana is to overcome dvandva anabhighata. That is, to overcome the onslaught of the pair of opposites, like Shita Ushna. So a yogi attains a capability in the body to withstand the onslaught of heat or cold, which means asana leads to adding strength in the body to face or to withstand all external disturbances, so which might distract the mind away from the higher practices of yoga. So that's why asana is here as part of the Ashtanga Yoga. So all these were discussed in the previous class. And now, of the last three, we can see is pranayama and pratyahara remain to be discussed. So that with that, the second chapter will get completed. Now we move to pranayama. Pranayama. Pranayama comes within the range of sutras 49 and 53. Shwasa prashwasayoho gati vichedaha pranayamaha. Tasmin sati shwasa prashwasayoho Gativichedaha Pranayamaha. That is the sutra which gives the general definition of pranayama. Tasmin sati asana jaye sati. That's what Vyasa says. Tasmin sati asana jaye sati. Once when a person conquers or attains a reasonable level of mastery over asanas, tasmin sati, only then pranayama becomes possible. Pranayama in the real sense. It is not that without attaining asana, pranayama is not possible. It is possible. One can do the control or breathing practices. But if pranayama has to lead to the next step, then asana has to be conquered, or a great level of mastery of asana is to be achieved. So, tasmin sati. So, asana jaye sati. Pranayama comes. And it is interesting to note that Vijnana Bhikshu, one of the commentators, says, as in the Panini Sutras, Anuvritti is done. Certain terms are taken, or are simply if there is a term in the previous sutra, the same term is repeated or carried forward to the next two sutras also. Similarly, Vijnana Bhikshu is of the opinion that tasmin sati, the term tasmin sati has to be carried forward to all the sutras henceforth. So, tasmin sati, when asana is firm, pranayama has to be done. And then, when pratyahara comes, again tasmin sati, which means when pranayama is firm, then pratyahara has to be done. And then tasmin sati, dharana, dhyana and samadhi, to all other limbs also, the tasmin sati has to be carried forward. That is the view of Vijnana Bhikshu. Vijnana Bhikshu considers asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, all these five as one unit, and they have to be practiced one after the other in the same course of practice, in the same duration of practice. So whereas yama and niyama can be done at a different point of time also, but once when someone is doing the practice of yoga, it should begin with asana and then continue and finally culminate in samadhi. So one can practice till dhyana and samadhi manifests, or intensifying dhyana results in samadhi. So this is very interesting point, where tasmin sati has to be carried forward from the asana sutra till the dhyana sutra. So tasmin sati, once the success in asana, and then the connotation of the meaning of tasmin sati changes from sutra to sutra. So in the pranayama sutra, tasmin sati means when success in asana is achieved, pranayama has to be done. Then when we carry forward tasmin sati to pratyahara sutra, then what happens is when success in pranayama is achieved, in which asana mastery is also included. So when pranayama, one succeeds in pranayama, then pratyahara. And similarly, tasmin sati in the context of dharana would mean when pratyahara mastery is achieved, dharana. So this tasmin sati, that which is carried forward, assumes the contextual difference in meaning. This has not been mentioned, but has been implied in the Vijnana Bhikshu Sutra. All that Vijnana Bhikshu says is that the tasmin sati has to be carried forward to the other sutras also. And by this this is what is implied. But another point that Vijnana Bhikshu says is that from asana till dhyana, they have to be practiced at one go. One after the other, they have to be practiced. That's for an advanced practitioner. Of course, during the initial stages, one has to practice asana for a longer duration and then try to focus on pranayama. Slowly, gradually, he has to add one by one to his practice. For an advanced practitioner, he has to start with asana and go till samadhi. So that is what is implied. So this is the meaning of tasmin sati. Now we come to the lakshana of pranayama, which is shvasa prashvasayoho gati vichedaha pranayamaha. So shvasa prashvasa gati vichedaha. Shvasa in Vyasa's view is kaushthyasya vayoho bahyasya vayoho achamanam shvasa. Shvasa refers to the inhalation of the breath or of the air that is outside. So bahyasya, that which is outside, what is that? Vayoho, the air. Achamanam, the intake of the air that is outside is shvasa. And which is inhalation. Shvasa refers to inhalation, and prashvasa kaushthyasya or koshthyasya vayoho nissaranam prashvasaha. So the expelling, nissaranam, expelling of the vayu which is in the koshta, in the storing space inside. So expelling the air from its place of stay, which is inside, that is prashvasa. So expelling the air or exhalation is prashvasa. Shvasa and prashvasa. This is the meaning of the two terms, shvasa and prashvasa, which is inhalation and exhalation. Tayoho gati vichedaha ubhaya abhavaha pranayamaha. The absence of both shvasa and prashvasa. Absence, vichedaha, stoppage, gati, movement. The stoppage of movement of both shvasa and prashvasa. The stoppage of movement of inhalation and exhalation is pranayama. Saha pranayama. Ubhaya bhavaha pranayama. This is again, there are discussions in the sub-commentaries as to which pranayama does this refer to. Some commentators say this refers to the Kevala Kumbhaka, which will be discussed later, the Chaturtha under the fourth kind of pranayama. Whereas others say this is the general definition of any pranayama. So which indicates pranayama essentially is stoppage of breath. So one inhales and holds breath. That is also pranayama. Where there is neither inhalation nor exhalation. When someone inhales and holds the breath, there also one can find the absence of inhalation and exhalation. And then when one exhales and then holds the breath, there also one can find the absence of movement of shvasa and prashvasa. So, in all these, we can see the application of this definition, gati vichedaha. So essentially, gati vichedaha is absence of movement. So, and this indicates kumbhaka, which will be presented later. So holding the breath essentially is pranayama, either inside or outside or natural stoppage of breath. So that gati vicheda is pranayama according to this sutra. and all commentators, most commentators take it that way. This is a general definition of all kinds of pranayama, where the movement of breath is controlled during the practice of pranayama. It has to be again understood that pranayama is not stopping of breath altogether at all times. No, during the practice of pranayama, the movement of shvasa and prashvasa is stopped for that duration. So for whichever duration a person can, according to one's strength of practice, that is pranayama. And pranayama does not mean one has to stop one's breath at all times. Tasmin sati shvasa prashvasa yoho gati vichedaha pranayamaha. So this presents the general definition of the pranayama, and then this is lakshanam, and then we see prabhedah, the categories or classifications, how many types of pranayamas are there, that is presented in the next two sutras. Bahyabhyantara stambhavrittihi deshakala sankhyabhihi paridrishtaha dirgha sukshmaha, and then bahyabhyantara vishayakshepi chaturthah. So four kinds of pranayamas and also the technique to practice to reach the goal of pranayama, that is also mentioned. So actually I should have made one more thing, prabhedaha, upayaha and lakshyam, that should also be added here, which means that in the next two sutras on pranayama, it presents the classifications of pranayama, number one. It presents the techniques which are to be adopted during the practice of pranayama in general, that is mentioned, and also the goal of pranayama, that is also mentioned. Bahya, Abhyantara, Stambhavritti and Chaturtha are the classifications or the prabheda of pranayama. Deshakala Sankhyabhi Paridrishtaha is the upaya of practicing pranayama, and the goal of pranayama or lakshya of pranayama is making the breath dirgha and sukshma. So three things emerge from the next two sutras: the divisions of pranayama, the techniques of pranayama or the tools that will help the practice of pranayama, and then the goal of pranayama, dirgha sukshma. These three aspects are presented in the next two sutras. Now we come to the first one, divisions of pranayama. What are the divisions of pranayama? Bahya pranayamaha, Abhyantara pranayamaha, Stambhavritti pranayamaha and Chaturthaha pranayamaha, the fourth. So Bahya is external, Abhyantara is internal, Stambhavritti is simple stoppage, and then Chaturtha is the fourth category. Now let us see what these four mean. So we have seen that pranayama is essentially gati vichedaha, absence of breath, both inhalation and exhalation, that is gati vichedaha. When that absence of breath happens after exhalation, it becomes bahya pranayama. When that gati vicheda happens after exhalation, then it is bahya pranayama, which means exhale the breath and then stop. That is bahya kumbhaka or bahya pranayama. Holding the breath after exhalation. Putting it simply, it would mean holding the breath after exhalation is bahya pranayama. Abhyantara pranayama refers to inhaling and then stopping and holding. So inhalation and holding the breath is Abhyantara Pranayamaha. And then Stambhavritti Pranayamaha. This is very, very rarely practiced. I don't see the practice of this not even being discussed anywhere. Stambhavritti, see, in Bahya and Abhyantara, holding the breath happens after exhalation or after inhalation. Whereas Stambhavritti is suddenly just holding the breath without considering whether the breath is inside or outside. Simply focusing on the nostrils and stopping the breath there. That is Stambhavritti. Look at the words of Vyasa, he says, Yatra prashvasa purvakaha gatyabhavaha saha bahyaha. After prashvasa, after exhalation, where the breath is stopped, that is bahya. Yatra shvasa purvakaha gatyabhavaha saha abhyantaraha. After shvasa or inhalation, when the breath is held, then it is abhyantara. Tritiyaha stambhavrittihi yatra ubhayabhavaha. The third pranayama is called as stambhavritti. Stambha is simply stopping. Stambhanam, becoming simply static without the reference of internal or external. Just holding the breath wherever it is. Sakrit prayatnat bhavati. Dvayoho yugapat bhavatyabhavaha iti. Yatha tapte nyastam upale jalam sarvataha sankocham apadyate. It is an example is presented in a very hot stone. When a drop of water is put, it shrinks from all sides. Similarly, simply holding the breath and wherever it is and both the air inside and outside, they shrink and attain that point where it is held, mostly in the nostrils the breath is held. So simple stoppage of breath without reference to whether the air has gone inside or outside, that is stambhavritti. I do not know why this is not practiced, this stambhavritti. But the Bahya and Abhyantara pranayamas are very popular, or kumbhakas are very popular. They are practiced across all schools of yoga. And then this is the three types of pranayamas. And then the fourth type is called as the fourth or the chaturthaha. Chaturthaha means Bahya Abhyantara Vishayakshepi Chaturthaha. So the chaturtha pranayama means Bahya Abhyantara Vishayakshepi. It is the kind pranayama which surpasses or which is attained after surpassing both the Bahya pranayama and Abhyantara pranayama. So when one succeeds in Bahya pranayama and when one succeeds in Abhyantara pranayama, a person surpasses those, the need to practice those, and then what happens is the chaturtha pranayama. Vyasa says, Chaturthastu shvasa prashvasayoho vishayavadharanat kramena bhumijayad ubhayakshepa purvakaha gatyabhavaha chaturthaha pranayamaha ityayam visheshah. The fourth pranayama in a way is a state which is achieved by observing and succeeding in the first and second stage. See, in the goal of pranayama should also be mentioned here as dirgha sukshmaha. So the purpose of making doing pranayama is to make it dirgha and sukshma, to make the breath dirgha and sukshma, making it very long and very subtle. The breath, when it is very short, chalevate chalam chittam. If there is agitation in the breath, then the mind is also agitated. When the breath is not agitated, when it is very long and deep and subtle, and it is not very loud, very sukshma, subtle, then naturally the mind is also conditioned by the state of the breath, and then it is also it also attains a state of calm. So the goal of pranayama is to make the breath dirgha and sukshma, to make it long and subtle. Bahya pranayama, the goal of bahya pranayama is also to make the breath dirgha sukshma. The goal of abhyantara pranayama is also to make the breath dirgha sukshma. To some extent, these two practices will be successful in making in leading to the goal. But gradually, when the practice is intensified and it reaches a particular state, then what happens is naturally the breath becomes dirgha and sukshma without the practice of exhaling and holding, or without the necessity of the prior practice of inhaling and holding the breath. I'll mention this once again. A level of dirgha sukshma is achieved after bahya pranayama. A level of dirgha sukshma is achieved after abhyantara pranayama. The chaturtha pranayama, or the fourth one, refers to a state which does not require the prior practice of bahya and abhyantara. When will this chaturtha state be reached? The natural capability to make the breath long and subtle, how will that be achieved? By the superior practice, by long term practice of both bahya and abhyantara. Bahya abhyantara vishaya akshepi. When one surpasses both bahya and abhyantara by long term committed practice, then naturally the state of chaturtha is achieved. There is a question, any word on what chaturtha could actually mean? Is it seen as bahya abhyantara stambhavritti, yet going beyond those? The sutra in itself mentions bahya abhyantara vishaya akshepi, means akshepi itself is an indication of going beyond. Akshepi is translated as surpassing, moving beyond that. So, but in Vyasa's commentary, all that we could see, I have read out, which says that because of the Bhumi Jaya, the lower pranayama practices of bahya and abhyantara have been surpassed, and probably, as I understand, a yogi, when he simply thinks that the breath has to become dirgha and sukshma, the breath becomes dirgha and sukshma, and that becomes the chaturtha pranayama. Whereas in bahya and abhyantara, he has to control the breath physically by holding it inside or outside, whereas in the chaturtha pranayama, if he mentally has a notion that let my breath now become long and subtle, then the breath becomes long and subtle. So the Chaturtha Pranayama is in a way a mental notion. It is not a physical control of breath, a mindful conscious control of breath. Rather, it is a command from the mind which the breath obeys without having to control it physically, as in the lower pranayamas where one consciously takes control over the breath. So the breath simply obeys the command of the mind in the Chaturtha Pranayama. So that is what results from the Chaturtha Pranayama. Bhumi Jaya, again there is a question, what is Bhumi Jaya? Bhumi Jaya refers to the success in the Bhumi. Bhumi means levels. Levels here refer to the Bahya, Abhyantara or lower. Bahya, Abhyantara and Stambhavritti are all the lower Bhumis, and Chaturtha is the higher Bhumi, higher level. This term Bhumi Jaya appears in context of Pranayama, and of course you will see the term Bhumi Jaya appearing in the context of Dharana Dhyana Samadhi also. In the third pada, Tasya Bhumishu Viniyogaha, there also the lower levels and higher levels are indicated by the term Bhumi. Bhumi simply means level. Adhara Bhumihi, Agrima Bhumihi. So these are the terms. So this is the Chaturtha Pranayama. And so we see that there are four classifications of Pranayama: Bahya, Abhyantara, Stambha and Chaturtha. And the goal of all these pranayamas is to make the prana dirgha and sukshma. So by the practice of Bahya, the breath is attempt is made to make the breath long and subtle. By Abhyantara pranayama, attempt is made to make the breath long and subtle. So this is very important to understand the goal of pranayama which has been presented by Patanjali. What do I yes, by pranayama one overcomes various by systematic practice of pranayama one overcomes various problems, breathing problems related to asthma and other respiratory problems, that is there. But how do I understand? What are the indications? So Dirgha Sukshma is an important indication. So all practitioners of pranayama should notice so if whether his breath has become long and subtle after the practice of pranayama. So the real indicator of some progress in pranayama is dirgha and sukshma, at least for some duration after the practice of pranayama. So that is what a yogi or a practitioner of pranayama should look for by the practice of pranayama. Which means that after the breathing practices, whether inhaling or holding or exhaling or holding it suddenly, by all these, after all these, one has to observe one's breath. So that is more important. So people think that breathing in and out and controlling the breath, with that pranayama ends. Whereas Patanjali clearly mentions the term Dirgha Sukshma. By all these, what should he observe after those activities? He should observe whether the breath has become Dirgha and Sukshma. This is the real goal of pranayama. The action is Gati Vichedaha. The observable goal is Dirgha Sukshma, which can be attained either by Bahya or by Abhyantara or by Stambhavritti or by an evolved practitioner by the Chaturtha Pranayama. So thus these classifications are but the various ways in which the gati vicheda leads to dirgha sukshma. When dirgha sukshma is observable, then the benefits of the pranayama will manifest. As we saw in the niyama ahimsa pratishthayam vairatyagaha. Similarly, what is pranayama pratishtha? When we see this sutra, the indications are clear. Pranayama pratishtha means, if at all there is a term, a similar term is taken here, what is being firmly established in pranayama? Firmly getting established in pranayama refers to making it dirgha and sukshma. So this is what we get from by analyzing the sutras back and forth. Again, there is another question in this regard. Patanjali does not use the terms Purakand, Rechaka, etc. Yes. In the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, you do not get the term Puraka and Rechaka. Even in the Vyasa Bhashya also, the term Puraka and Rechaka are not to be found. So in the commentary to this sutra, you don't find the usage of the term Puraka and Rechaka. But of course, in various other commentaries, the later commentaries, you find of course the term Puraka and Rechaka. In Hatha Yoga texts, there is the term Puraka and Rechaka are used, the Puraka, Rechaka and Kumbhaka are used for many, many times. So, whereas in Yoga Sutras, these are the terms which indicate the various kinds of pranayama. Bahya, Abhyantara, Stambha and Chaturtha. And this third Stambha Vritti pranayama is not advised, or it is not advised by many of the yoga practitioners. That has to be investigated as to why this is not practiced anywhere. So, these are the two aspects of pranayama that we see. That is Prabheda and Upaya. Prabheda and Lakshya. So the divisions of pranayama and the goal of pranayama. And to achieve that goal, what is the upaya? What are all the upayas that one has to practice or utilize? So it is nothing but Desha Kala Sankhyabhihi Paridrishtah. So Paridrishtah is observing the breath. During the action, the breath has to be observed with reference to desha, place, with reference to kala, time, and sankhya, the number. So when the breath is observed with the help of desha, kala, and sankhya, then what happens is it becomes dirgha and sukshma. This has to be explained. Desha, each of this pranayama can be observed with regard to desha. In a sense, the breath which has been inhaled and held, its desha is inside. And then the breath that has been exhaled and after that there is a hold, the desha is outside. And for the stambhavritti, desha is both inside and outside. Let me explain this desha. Not in Vyasa's commentary, but in other commentaries, we find the discussion on the terms Desha, Kala, and Sankhya, Paridrishta. Desha means when the air is exhaled, what happens is how long or for what distance the air exhaled from the nostril travels. That is desha, outside, bahya desha. So a small piece of cloth or a small blade of grass is held, and then it is held before the in front of the nostrils, and as the practice progresses, the distance between the blade of grass that is held in front of the nostril increases. So gradually increasing the distance of the blade of the grass which is held before the nostril and the nostril, it increases, and the breath exhaled is still able to make the blade of grass move. So so increasing the distance of the object that is held before the nostril by the strength of practice, and that object is made to move by the breath, and the object does not mean anything very big, as small as a blade of a grass. So increasing of that desha is the gradual technique. So one has to exhale longer to make the blade of grass move, to shake. So the elongation of the breath happens outside. And similarly, when one inhales, the desha becomes all that is inside, from the top of the head to the toe. By inhalation, the commentators say of the breath that a subtle sensation as if the ant is moving. You can see the insect, ant, right? So the ant moving can be felt inside. So as the inhalation becomes very deeper and it is observed, then one can feel the movement of the prana in any of the internal limbs. So what is the indication of the movement of prana or the distance that the prana has moved inside? One can feel a sensation in the limbs as that of the movement of an ant inside. See, for example, I'm just giving an example. If it is inhaled and it has traveled, the prana has traveled, it is the prana and not the breath I'm speaking. If the prana has traveled beyond the abdomen, then one can slowly, if it has reached the abdomen and beyond that abdomen, for example, it has reached the knee, the kneecaps, then one can feel a tingling sensation in the knees, which indicates the prana, the inhalation has made the prana reach the knees. So that is desha, the movement of the desha the expanse of desha that is achieved by abhyantara pranayama. And stambhavritti pranayama again indicates the shrinking of the prana from both the external region and also the internal region. This again, Vijnana Bhikshu, the commentator, mentions that the absence of movement is understood by the absence of movement on the blade of grass which is held before the nostril. That also indicates the success in Stambhavritti, and also absence of any sensation inside abhyantara, that also indicates the success in stambha vritti. So by desha one can observe the elongation or the of the breath in the pranayamas. And then kala, how long can the holding of the breath can happen after inhalation or after exhalation, the duration is mentioned by kala. One can gradually increase the duration. As one increases the duration of holding the breath, internal or external or stambha, so then what happens is kala. So by kala also the breath can be observed. By desha also the movement of the breath can be observed. And sankhya, so one can use the number of times of practice. So these many times, 12 times, 24 times, 36 times. There are many ways of calculating the number of times the pranayama is done. I think it is indicated in this sutra, and the details of this can be found in the commentary of Hatha Yoga Pradipika, that is the Jyotsna commentary of Hatha Yoga Pradipika, mentions about the times, the number of times pranayama has to be done at different points of day. That is also mentioned in the text. Whereas Vyasa does not mention anything about the number of times the pranayama has to be done. So by these three, by desha, the area, both internal and external, that is affected by the, or affected or touched by the prana during pranayama, and kala, the duration or the capability to hold the breath, increasing that, and sankhya, gradually increasing the number of times of practice. By these, by observing all these things, what happens is, by any of these, bahya, abhyantara, stambha, vritti, what happens is the prana is made dirgha and sukshma. So this is the technique, the threefold technique of practicing pranayama. Desha, kala, sankhya, paridarshanam. And making the resultant goal is making the breath dirgha sukshma. The three ways in which it is done is bahya, abhyantara and stambha vritti. And the fourth one is, of course, just by a mental notion, the breath is made dirgha and sukshma. So thus we see the lakshana of pranayama, the divisions of pranayama, the techniques of pranayama and the goal of pranayama. And finally, we see the intermediate benefit of pranayama, the intended benefit of the pranayama is to make one capable of the next practices. Of course, the intermediate benefit is given as prakasha avarana kshayaha. So prakasha avarana kshayaha refers to pranayaman abhyasyatah asya yoginah kshiyate viveka jnana avarana viveka jnana avarana karma, avaranam karma, which is the karmic covering, the karma, the vasanas and all those things that is covering the viveka jnana, the clarity, the discrimination between prakriti and purusha, the difference between the prakriti and purusha, that covering which is created by the karma will slowly reduce or diminish. Viveka jnana avaraniyam karma. So the covering that stops a viveki, a practitioner, to realize the viveka which is existing in our mind. So that covering is slowly removed by the pranayama. Vyasa also mentions that prakashavaranam karma samsara nibandhanam pranayama abhyasatu durbalam bhavati. By the practice of pranayama, the strength of the karmas which bind us to the worldly activities, samsara nibandhanam, which bind us to the worldly activities, that becomes weakened, that the strength diminishes, durbalam. The karma, effect of the karma becomes durbala by the practice of pranayama. One more important aspect to be noticed here is pratikshananca kshiyate. Every kshana, every moment that the pranayama is practiced, progressively the strength of the karma which holds us down, that is weakened. So the higher the time that is devoted to the practice of pranayama, the weaker will be the influence of the karma on our intellect. So the intellect will gradually be made free from the influences of the karma. Karma indicates the vasanas and all that is associated, samskaras and other things. So when the mind gradually becomes independent, is freed from the clutches of the karma, then it could see the difference between prakriti and purusha. So prakasha avarana kshayaha, this is what is intended by pranayama. So prakasha avarana kshayaha, this happens. And dharanasu yogyata, that is the next sutra, it gives the qualification to practice dharana, dhyana and samadhi. So as we can see, as we found different intermediate results to the yamas, yama, ahimsa leads to vairatyaga and all those benefits, intermediate benefits are different from the path of yoga, whereas with regard to asana and pranayama, the intermediate benefit and the real intended benefit seem to be the one and the same. So asana gives dvandva sahishnuta, ability to withstand the onslaught of the differences or the imbalances outside, which again helps in the progress towards the higher aspects of yoga. And here also we see that in pranayama also, the covering on the light. Light here, prakasha, refers to the light of discrimination, viveka. So that is reduced, and qualification to practice dharana also becomes, also is achieved. This is also nothing but two tools which help in the progress to the next level. So this in a way is a slight difference from the avantara phala, the intermediate benefits that were stated for yama and niyama, and the avantara phala that is stated for asana and pranayama. So the intermediate benefits of asana and pranayama are nothing but the necessary qualifications to progress further in the path of yoga. So thus we see the avantara phala of pranayama or the intermediate benefit of pranayama as dharana yogyata, qualification to practice dharana, and then gradual reduction of the karmic covering that blocks the light of discrimination, prakasha. So in this segment on pranayama, we saw the definition, lakshana of pranayama, prabheda, divisions, upaya, techniques, and the goal, lakshyam, that is dirgha sukshma. And of course, the avantara phala of the pranayama was also seen. The final aspect of the second pada is pratyahara. I'll just take some 2 minutes to cover this. Pratyahara refers to swasva vishaya asamprayoge chittasya swarupanukaraha iva indriyanam pratyaharaha. I will discuss this in detail in the next class, but I will mention this in brief now. I know we have exceeded the time, but I take 2 more minutes to mention this. There are 2 aspects in pratyahara. Pratyahara is simply the control over the senses. So that is defined. So the control over the body is asana. Controlling the breath is pranayama, and control over the senses is pratyahara. All these are essential in the progress towards the goal of yoga. So that pratyahara sutra has 2 parts: vishaya asamprayogaha, chitta anukaraha. That is the lakshana. Vishaya asamprayogaha, vishaya swasva vishaya, the respective objects of the senses. We know that each of the senses have their own objects. The eyes have the objects to be seen, and then the ears, for the eyes, rupam is the object or the form. For the ears, shabda is the object. For the sense of touch, it is the thing which can be touched and felt. That is the object. Taste is the object for the rasanendriya, and gandha is the smell is the object for the ghranendriya, or the sense of smelling. So the asamprayogaha, the non-contact of the senses with their respective objects, is one portion of pratyahara. So the disconnection or the withdrawal. Pratyahara actually means withdrawal. Pratyaharanam. The withdrawal of the senses from their respective objects, or the non-permitting of the indriyas in getting connection with their respective objects is called as pratyahara. This is one portion. And then the second portion is chitta anukaraha. The second portion refers to the total surrendering of the senses to the will of the mind. The senses following the chitta anukaraha. The means the senses following the chitta. So withdrawal, or the absence of connection of the senses with their respective objects, is one aspect of pratyahara. And the second aspect of pratyahara is the obedience of the senses to the mind. So that is the second aspect of pratyahara. When the both of these are there, then pratyahara is said to exist. It is not mere abstinence from connecting with the respective objects. It is also obedience of the senses to the mind. The total surrender of the senses to the mind, chitta anukaraha, is pratyahara. This is discussed in great detail in the commentary. Various kinds of pratyaharas are mentioned and they are rejected, and this pratyahara, which is proposed in this sutra, is presented as the final kind of the real pratyahara. Vyasa's Bhashya is worth studying on this pratyahara. So in no way senses can be permitted to connect with their respective objects, number one. Number two, the senses cannot act independently they cannot drag the mind into the objects. Rather, they become obedient to the mind. That is the making them obedient to the mind is the second aspect. So these are the two aspects of pratyahara. And what is the avantara phala, the benefit of pratyahara? Nishchalata, absolute stillness. Parama indriya vashyata, highest control over the senses is achieved. What is the highest control over the senses? Is nishchalata, ability to make the senses absolutely still, not getting diverted or not getting attracted towards their respective objects naturally. So the natural way of the senses is to get attracted towards their respective objects. Even in the presence of the respective objects, if the senses do not move, then that is the paramavashyata, the highest level of control over the senses. Indriyanam vishayeshu atyantam aprasaraha. This is Sadashiva Brahmendra's wordings. These two are from Sadashiva Brahmendra's commentary, where he says the stillness of the senses. He further explains what is the stillness of senses. Indriyanam vishayeshu atyantam aprasaraha. The non-connection of to a highest degree of the senses into their respective objects, that is achieved by this pratyahara. Total control over the senses naturally manifests when one repeatedly practices vishaya asamprayoga and chitta anukara, which constitute pratyahara. So thus the second pada is complete with this sutra on pratyahara. We will discuss this pratyahara in bit more detail in the next class, and also have an overview of all that has been covered in the second chapter in the 8 units that we have made this second chapter into, and then we can move into the third chapter. So here ends the class on the second chapter. Dvitiya padaha samaptah. Sadhana padaha samaptah. So we have crossed the time limits, and is there any question? Sorry, there is one question. Is there no exact mention of inhaling through left nostril, exhaling through right nostril? Yes. As far as Yoga Sutra is concerned, these techniques are not mentioned. It does not mean that these techniques did not exist during the period of Patanjali. No. They did exist, but as this is a sutra text, it may not have been explained in detail or discussed in detail. Only the principles are given here and the general techniques are given here. All the details of inhaling through the left nostril and exhaling through the right nostril, and then again inhaling through the right and exhaling through the left, all that is found in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, which is a later text. It doesn't mean that it is created only by Hatha Yoga Pradipika. It might have existed prior to that, but it is documented in Hatha Yoga Pradipika. It can be taken that way. Yes. Vijay Raghavan sir says that please upload last class in website. I will do, sir. I apologize for the delay, and that will be done. Both the classes, the recordings of both the classes, the last one and this one, will be done in a couple of days. And with the two articles on Prayatna Shaitilya and Ananta Samapatti, that will also be there on the web in a couple of days. So, we can conclude the class here. with the Pratana Shloka. Yogena Chittasya Padena Vacham Malam Sharirasya Chavaidyakena Yopa Karottam Praharam Muninam Patanjalim Pranjaliranatosmi. Namaste Shubhadinam. Dhanyavadaha Pal Mahodaya for the recording.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.